Not My Wife by Nick Petrou. It is not my wife. I knew it before they removed the bandages, exposing its waxen face, nose melted to the bone, two dark windows into the nasal cavity, no hair. Long before, I knew. In fact, I sensed the exact moment the flames steamed my wife's soul out of her body. I had been at work when something like nausea wobbled through me, turning my muscles to muck. I was a terrified speck of consciousness, suspended in an ocean of tar. I lolled over the side of my desk chair, and Callum ran across the office like I was having a stroke. All I said was, "My wife. I can't feel my wife." When the doctors told me she was terribly burned, but alive, I insisted they were wrong. She was dead. Why would she be in hospital? Several days later, they said I could come and see her for myself. Before the fire, whenever I was driving towards my wife, wherever she was, it felt like driving home. The road to the hospital was a road to nowhere. The void. I wept for her on the way, but also for how the doctors and my family were prolonging my fall to despair. I just wanted to strike the bottom already. From there, I could see if what remained of my life was even worth living. My mother-in-law guided me into the bleached hospital room, and there it was, lying on its back, mummified. Through the smell of disinfectant, I caught a whiff of sulfur. Through the choruses of my weeping family, I heard it whisper, "I am yours." Of course, no one believed me. And when I shouted at it to get out and was lifted out of the room, I swear, even bandaged as it was, that it smiled. When they made me bring it home and feed it through a straw, I drove my car into a tree. Much too slowly. Callum stayed with me for a while after that. Driving me home after my failed suicide, he had said, "All that stuff about inner beauty, it's hard to wake up to that every day. God, I'm so sorry, man, but it's her, your wife, all her memories, all her love." "It's not her," I said. After Callum left, it started doing things on its own. It shuffles through the house, sucking on mints and ice cream with its lipless maw, touching the things that once belonged to my wife, giggling whenever I turn my back. Its sulfurous stench continues to grow, though it bathes in scalding water. I weep whenever I stare into its eyes, which never blink. I weep, and I think of my wife, peeling, wilting. I think of the last thing she saw. It. I ask it what it wants. I scream the question, but it never answers. It only whispers, "I am yours. I am yours. I am yours." The end. Hello kids, welcome to episode 4 of Spinning Yarns with Nick and Paddy, a podcast created by my writing partner Nick Petrou and I, Patrick McCarthy, where we'll be immersing ourselves in the world of the written word and attempting to be as entertaining and as smart-ass as possible. Before we commence, we'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on which we meet, the Whadjuk people of the Noongar Nation, and pay respect to their continuing culture and the contribution they make to the life of this city and this region and their leaders, past, present, and emerging. How the fuck are you, Nick?
Excellent.
I can tell. Sitting there all regal with the massive fucking wine glass.
I feel
regal.
Last time I was drinking out of the incorrect glass, so...
A beaker.
It really set my day up to fail.
Well, I'm once again drinking this fucking... What is it? Acid?
Mmm.
Johnny Walker Red Label. The shittest label.
We'll get through that bottle soon and I'll get you something nicer. Cheers.
Oh. So delicious.
That was a full body quiver, hey?
Yeah.
So let's get into it, hey?
Yeah, so the short story you wrote, Not My Wife, which I was so tempted to read out entirely in the Borat voice.
It really would have suited it.
I reckon so. It is not my wife. She is so burnt. She's so burnt. She's so singed. Yeah. It would have been very atonal because that story was completely fucked. Please explain yourself, sir.
Man, I think with that one, I had a fucked dream about it, like a partner being horribly disfigured by a fire. And it just got me thinking, like, what would you do in that situation? How would you respond? Because, you know, and I think the character Callum says it in the story, like, it's all about the beauty is on the inside thing. But man, like every day faced with something like that would be really hard.
Well, yeah, it's all like speculative, you know, like, because, you know, you presume that you would be there for them and help them through their trial and their tribulation, especially a trial by fucking fire.
Yeah.
Especially if you love them. But it was, I imagine, very, very fun in a perverse sort of way to imagine that, you know, from a different angle.
Well, yeah, I just thought I'd kind of bring in some sort of supernatural element to deal with it. Maybe a person in this situation might find it hard to recognize their partner after they were physically disfigured like that. Because, like, faces are everything in our society. It's so important. And to see the way that people are expressing themselves in their facial features, you wouldn't get any of that.
Yeah, true.
Your brain, I feel like, would have difficulty recognizing them. You'd have to tell yourself all the time that this is them. And that's why I put that little line in there saying, like, I am yours, I am yours. It's like, you know, maybe she is still her.
Yeah, I was really glad to whisper that bit out because it was quite ghostly. And the thing is, like, you mentioned the word supernatural before. Like, that's, like, the barest of an undercurrent, you know? It's, like, yeah, it could be supernatural, but it could also just be, like, you know, the twists of his mind and his grief.
Yeah.
You know, wreaking havoc on his psyche and his love. So, like, I love that, like, that open-endedness. And it was, like, creepy in this strange way. You're fucked, man.
I don't have too many more stories like that lined up. That's a lie. I've got a lot. One thing I did wanted to address is...
He likes to abandon children in the stories too. Spiritually and emotionally cut ties with his loved ones.
In a previous episode, it was episode one, we talked about Bronze and Hazel, and I said that I like hadn't used that tense shift since writing that story. That's another lie. I did it in that story just then, and you know what? I actually think I do it more frequently than I thought, but I kind of, you know, set it up to bring it into the present tense. Like, he provides the context in past tense, and then, you know, he's still in that situation, so then I shift to present tense. So, fuck it. If it works...
Well, yeah, I mean, the rules are there to be broken, you know? Like, you can acquaint yourself, and you're very well acquainted with the POV, as we're going to be talking about in this episode later on.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, I didn't really notice anything too dramatic or jarring in the shift of perspective or tense. I thought it was great. And, you know, we've grown a lot since episode one, man.
Yeah, we really, really have.
But yeah, anyway, that was Not My Wife. I recall nothing before you were brought through the door on the morning of that lovely spring day. Life was surely a bore, an intolerable chore beneath skies that were endlessly grey. Mum says it was war when she birthed me, red raw, forced to scream, to beg, to pray. On my way out, I tore, totally covered in gore, and left Mum in a terrible way. Never again, Mother swore, I'm not having any fucking more. But old Daddy soon led her astray. And as I crawled on the floor, an imp from Earth's core, her nerve endings started to fray. But there was no need to roar. You weren't at all a chore. Never once made her small body pay. There was no gruesome gore. You were pure to the core, the dawn of a brand new day. You weren't gross, red or raw. You'd not one single flaw. A cherub heaven surely mislaid. Oh, that baby of yours, said the docs on the ward. Oh, she's an angel, folks. What can we say? And from then on I swore we'd be together for sure. If not in body, then in spirit we'd stay. Now you turn 24, hope we have 100 more, keeping on till we eventually grey. Yes, I will always adore, I recall nothing before, you came home on that lovely spring day. The end.
That was another lovely one, Patrick, really.
Thanks.
No, I feel good and gooey inside after listening to that.
Ew. Ew. Christ. Well, yeah, I mean, well, thanks. I guess it was it was for my sister. I wrote it for her 24th birthday. We're very close, and I wanted to sort of, I just wanted to convey that as fully as possible. With a bit of piss takery in there as well, you know? Like, I genuinely was a horrifying thing to behold as an infant. Like,
and now.
And now. But, like, even more so. Like, I was purple, 2 foot long at birth, and then he burst my mum in two. She can't even fucking run. Like, the doctors say, like, don't run, because her insides might fall out.
Never again.
Ass. Yeah, she can't run. Jesus. Just a walk. Yeah, so, like, I was just a horror. Like, claw my cheeks, like, cry all night. Then my sister comes along, and she was genuinely, like, my mum and dad were just like, it was like, they were just expressed with this noise. Like, she was just in magazines, she was that beautiful, slept all night, was so sweet. And, you know, and she is. Like, I adore my sister, Emily. Mm. And, yeah, I just wanted to convey that. It was something very playful, you know, like that consistent rhyming scheme, giving it some sort of pace.
Mm.
Almost like a limerick, like a little folk song or story.
Yeah.
You know, and trying to do it at a certain length where the rhymes don't get irritating, and I still feel like they get fucking irritating.
I actually feel that it got a little bit bogged down. I think you mentioned, you spend a bit of time focusing on, like, the gore and, like, the physical descriptions of the birth, and that comes back in quite frequently. There was a portion of it where I was like, this feels like it's dragging on a little bit.
And you know the only reason? It's because I had wanted to pad it out.
Yeah.
It's, like, the lamest excuse ever. Like, it wasn't because, like, oh, yeah, I want to convey properly to the audience that I was really, really gruesome. Like, I was genuinely looking for more rhymes.
How come?
For gore and raw and pure to the
core. Why not just have it shorter?
I just figured it was, like, it was better for pacing. Like, that middle segment would have been too quick.
Mm.
And the, I guess, like, building to any sort of, I mean, it's not like it's building to any sort of real climax. But, you know, that build towards the wholesome ending and the love at the end of it, you know, I feel like it needed padding out, and that's genuinely the lamest excuse I have, but it's the only one I've got. Mm. Anyway.
No, nice one, man. And I do see all that you talked about in this poem reflected in the way that you and your sister behave around each other. It's a strong relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah, yeah. She's sound, man. We used to hate each other in, like, our, you know, pubescent years. Like, for a couple of years, she was just like the biggest minge you'd ever met.
I've got a sister, so I know what you're talking
about.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And vice versa. Like, I was just like this older, loud, bullying cunt, as I endeavored to be.
Yeah.
But yeah, she just, we have this magical bond, and I love performing that one, because people seem to love, people asked for that one to be played, which is really nice. They love
it,
that.
Yeah. It would resonate, again, with someone who does have a sister, like, such as myself.
And lots of people.
Not the same relationship that you guys have.
Well, she's horrible.
Yeah. But so are you, so it works.
Yes, it does, baby. So, Nick, of the two of us, you definitely write the most short prose fiction pieces. I predominantly write poetry, which is more or less always from my own subjective point of view.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. My question is for you. What do you consider before you write a story in terms of which point of view to tell it from?
Oh, a lot, actually. But essentially, to understand this, you need to understand that there are four different entities of POV. So there's the author, and I guess that's pretty self-explanatory. Then there's the narrator. Now, they're the entity that's telling the story. They can be a character within the actual story, or they might not be. If they're in the story, they don't necessarily have to tell the story as it unfolds. They might, you know, for example, tell it in 10 years' time.
Okay.
Or 10 years after the events of the story.
Mm.
The viewpoint character, this is a third entity. They're a character within the actual story specifically how they are as the story unfolds, as opposed to, you know, in 10 years' time.
Hmm.
They only know what they would know as the story unfolds, not what they would know, you know, in the future. Then there's the protagonist and they're the star of the show. They don't necessarily have to be the same entity as the narrator and the viewpoint character, though. They can be someone else.
Okay, so how many points of view can one choose from? Like, is there a set number of POVs to choose from when you start writing a story?
There's infinite, I would say.
Fuck.
Yeah, well, like, you know, you've got your classic first, second, third person POV, right? Yeah. Those I like to think of as umbrella terms.
Okay.
And then within each of those, you can use two different things to modify those parent POVs to produce potentially like an infinite number of them. And those two things are the temporal distance and the psychic distance.
What the hell do you mean by those phrases, bro?
So,
temporal distance and psychic distance.
The temporal distance is a little easier to wrap your head around. It's literally just the time between the events of the story and when the story is being told.
So by temporal, are you just referring to like present tense, past tense, and future tense?
That's definitely a part of it, but there's a lot of variation, I guess, within those. Like a story written in present tense, I would say would have a temporal distance of zero. In this case, the narrator and the viewpoint character are the same entity because the narrator hasn't had any time to reflect on the events of the story.
So I'm doing this, I do that.
Yeah. So a story written in past tense could have a temporal distance of literally whatever, though.
True. Like something that happened yesterday or 10 years ago or centuries ago.
Yeah, if you're creative enough, true. It can happen in 100 years' time, you know, or in a sci-fi story or something like that. Yeah,
yeah, true. Totally. Yeah, gotcha.
There's, usually a difference between the narrator and the viewpoint character in a past tense because time has passed. They might be retrospective on the events which occurred in the story. So the narrator might look back at the viewpoint character, who the same person, right? And be like, okay, 20 years have passed. I've learned a lot more about life and I'm maybe regretful about the things that I did when this story was going on. So they look at it from the future and they're able to be retrospective about it. So one thing I did want to bring up is that while sticking to past tense, you can also throw retrospection out the window if you want to. In this case, the narrator would be telling the story as it unfolds, like in present tense, but in past tense instead. And this is called literary past tense. It's like a really good way of keeping things in the moment while avoiding the drawbacks of present tense. I guess the other one was the psychic distance, right? So that's essentially how psychically close the narrator is to the viewpoint character. In a first-person story, like the psychic distance is usually short because they're the same entity. So we get a direct look into their head and obviously their personality colors the narration because it's their voice. Generally, the shorter the psychic distance, the more subjective the narrative is because the narrator and the viewpoint character are closer to each other psychically. So the viewpoint character's opinions and beliefs and all of that flavors the narration.
Oh, great.
And it also leads it to be unreliable because, you know, if something's more subjective, it's less objective and therefore more unreliable. And that doesn't mean like knowingly unreliable. I know you can have some narrators that are like intentionally misleading the reader. I'm just meaning unreliable because, you know, people are unreliable.
Like Lolita. It's one of the best unreliable narrators ever, man.
I don't know what that is.
It's pretty fucked. We can talk about it another time.
Okay.
So, like at some point in your writing, your choices of temporal and psychic distance must be combined. Do you do that consciously?
It's a little more abstract than that. So, you know, if a shorter amount of time has passed between the events of the story and when the story is being told, then it's more likely that the narrator is going to align psychically with the viewpoint character because, you know, in a first-person story, for instance, they're the same person. If only five minutes has passed, they're pretty much going to be the same person. So psychically, they're closer. You now, compared to you in 10 years, is going to be quite psychically different. You know, you're hopefully, and you know, if you do mature.
Debatable. So I remember I remember being very interested in these terms you used in another chat we've had. I was going to ask you what the differences were between direct, indirect, and free indirect discourses.
Yeah.
Use right. that and my brain fucking melted. So
I like to think of those as real tangible tools that you can use to manipulate the psychic distance. It's just one of the more ways to deal, one of the easier ways to deal with this abstract concept.
Okay.
So essentially, direct discourse is word for word dialogue and thought, usually set apart with quotation marks, italics, and tags like he said and he thought.
Like A Song of Ice and Fire.
Mm. Mm. So, for an example, I'm so lucky to have Nick, thought Patrick. And, you know, everything before thought Patrick would be italicized if you wanted to do it that way. You don't have to.
Which sets out as a thought
in
my head.
Obviously, if you were to use quotation marks, it might be a bit confusing because people usually associate those with, you know, dialogue. So indirect discourse, the next one, uses filter words like thought and felt to set a thought or feeling apart, though the content isn't inside quotation marks or italics. So an example of that would be, Patrick thought about how lucky he was to have Nick.
Man, nice. Yeah, I do think about that a lot. And by a lot, I mean not at all.
Then there's free indirect discourse, and this is where the viewpoint character's personality colours the narration, giving the third-person narrator a distinct voice. In this way, the narrator and the viewpoint character are close to being the same entity in a third-person story. So this would be, Patrick was so lucky to have Nick.
Okay.
You see the difference there?
Yeah, for sure. Man, there's so many things to think about.
There are.
That's probably why I don't write prose.
Yeah, and we're not even done yet. Like, there's still more. I'm going to keep going. So talked earlier about subjectivity in terms of psychic distance. There's the other end of the scale. You could have an objective narrator, like as much as possible objective narrator, where none of the viewpoint characters, thoughts or beliefs or all that flavors the narration at all. So they're just super detached. Ernest Hemingway is like often associated with this type of POV.
True. Nice one. Well, my last question was, can you stop now?
I think there's some other stuff we wanted to cover, so no.
Okay, great.
So we're talking about maybe some other POVs which don't fit too nicely into those categories we just discussed. And these are like first-person witness, first-person referral, and first-person plural. I just want to talk a little bit about first-person referral because like I love it and I've used it in a few stories and they've been some of my strongest. But essentially, the first-person narrator refers constantly to another character with the pronoun you. This doesn't mean it's second person, though. This POV works best with intimate stories with just like two characters, the I and the you. And the you could be a secondary character, but they could also be a protagonist. It works really well for creepy stories when maybe someone's like holding a secret back. So the I is holding the secret back from the you, or you may, whatever it is, or maybe they're stalking the you, like walking in the forest around their house and the you doesn't know that the I is there, if that makes sense.
Yes.
So it's a pretty niche POV.
Yeah, 100%. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Very much rooted in horror or some scary stories. But isn't the Bunyip done like that?
The Bunyip? Yeah. That's done like that. And that is a weird story. And then also Made of You.
Nick has written a very strange story we'll be revealing at some later date.
And also that story Made of You that I've talked about a few times. And that one's been received pretty well. It's made some shortlists and stuff.
Yeah, I like that one.
That's, first person referral. Referral. And it's one of my favorite stories.
Christ. That was a lot.
Yeah, it is a lot, man.
A very enlightening interview.
Yeah. Oh, I hope so for not just you, but other people as well. One thing I will say about POV, like when it comes to choosing one, when you're sitting down to put a story together, you really got to feel it out.
Mm.
Like, you know, sometimes you'd be like, oh, I want to write this specific type of story. Like you might want to try first person referral and then you shape the story towards that. But if you've got a story in mind and you're struggling to come up with a POV, the best thing you can do is just to sit down and start writing.
And just see what POV happens. Takes form.
See what takes form, see what suits it the best. See what information you want to withhold from your reader, what you want to reveal to them, stuff like that.
Mm.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was the expert on POVs, Nick Petrou. Helping us all out to become best storytellers.
I'm blushing.
Thanks very much, Nicholas.
Cheers.
All right, so So that was episode 4 of Spinning Yarns with Nick and Patty.
Damn, I'm moving along fast, hey?
Yeah, no, man. Time flies when you're having...
an average time.
Yeah, so anyway, I'm actually having a really nice time.
Me too.
I reckon all our millions of listeners are also having a great time.
Billions.
Billions, in fact, yeah.
I just wanted to say, before we do wrap up, that story that you read at the beginning, not the my wife. Yeah.
My wife.
Not my wife. That was previously published by Ghost Orchid Press. So technically that was a reprint.
So we traditionally finish each episode on a quote. I've decided to come up with a funny one. We have neither one of us have actually read anything by this author and playwright, W. Somerset Maugham. He was an English playwright, novelist, and short story writer, and you know, sort of like the 1910s, 1920s. He wrote a very famous book called Of Human Bondage, which I've always wanted to read. His quote is, "There are 3 rules for writing the novel. Unfortunately, no one knows what they are." Cheers.